Good morning. The past few weeks, we've discussed three different concepts of a chazaka with mitzvahs. Today, Yemirtzeh Hashem, we will discuss the final and most controversial of two other ideas that give people rights to particular mitzvahs. To briefly recap, the first concept that we discussed was the concept of chashad. If the makar is that if you have an eruv that's put in a particular person's house for an extended period of time, it cannot be switched to another person's house. Mishum darkei shalom. As we point, the Rivash points out that whenever the tzibur does something in a particular way, a particular person has a right, a kavod. In the absence of any good reason, we certainly do not change things. Even if there is some reason to switch things, still the concept of darkei shalom applies. Whenever the tzibur changes things, takes things away from someone, it is likely for it to cause machloikis. And therefore, mishum darkei shalom, we keep the status quo. We do not change things. If it was in his house until now, it remains in his house. If there's a compelling reason, they already, the place and speak out, that would be different. There's a very good reason Darkei Shalom has its limits. It means if just someone else wants a turn, we say no. It'll cause a machloikis, don't take the turn. But if there's a compelling reason, then already Darkei Shalom will not apply. There's a limit to what we will do for the Darkei Shalom. In addition, when there's a compelling reason, everyone will understand why it's being changed. It will not create a chashad, it will not reflect badly on the original host. And therefore, the concept of chashad is limited to cases where there's no good reason to change it. The second concept was the idea of a chazaka with mitzvahs. The makar was a Mordechai. The Ramban in Chesh Mishpah Kuf Mem Test brings it down. And the concept of chazaka is when the tzibur gives over the right to do a mitzvah to a particular individual, once it's his, it's his. However, it must be clear from the circumstances that the tzibur intended to give this mitzvah over to the person indefinitely. They need to have, either that needs to be the minhag, or it needs to be obvious from the circumstances that their intent was to give over this mitzvah. And based on that, we said if there was no one else available to do it, then this halacha would not apply. Because the fact that he did it year after year, if he's the only person that was roi lakach, doesn't prove that the tzibur gave it over to him. He did it every year simply because there was no other alternative. The third concept, and this is a Yerushalmi in Harayus, quoted by the Rivash, was the Yerushalmi says that if you had two families, one of the, they used to go into the Nasi, one would go first, the other would go second. They had an order that they kept. So if one day they decide to switch the order, the second person would like to now be first. The Yerushalmi says they cannot switch it, and it's learned out of the Krushim, that the Krushim were each put in the same spot. You would not switch. If a Keresh was in the Kodesh Kadoshim, they would keep it there. Every time they disassembled and reassembled the Mishkan, they kept each board in the same place. So from here we see that when there's a Seder, when there's an order, when this person's first, this person is second, that order has to be respected, and it cannot be switched around. The Ranach points out that this concept in the Yerushalmi, that a Talmud Chacham has Kadima, he says applies only to the case of Yerushalmi where it's a question of kavod. Question of who goes in first, who goes in second. It was a kavod to go in first. So we have to give the Talmud Chachamim this kavod and they will cut the line, so to speak. However, if you're dealing with a chazaka with a mitzvah, or you're dealing with being doich of the person completely, if an Am HaAretz is doich and doing a mitzvah, he's been doing in this community, there were a bunch of Amaratzim and the Mafter Yoyna went to an Amaretz. If a Talmud Chacham moves to town, he cannot take it away. Because it's only when it's a question of kavod, of who goes in first, the Talmud Chacham comes first. But for a Talmud Chacham to go ahead and to steal someone else's mitzvah, chas v'shalom. And therefore the Ranach says this idea of the Yerushalmi is limited. Maram Shik, when he discusses the concept of chazakos and mitzvahs, so he brings up an interesting case. And he says like this. What would be in a situation where there is a mitzvah which he says is in Zuta Shal Yom Shlilusein Shal Nar, this is a mace mitzvah. No one else is taking care of this mitzvah. There's a communal need. It's not being addressed. And someone gets up and he takes the initiative, he takes responsibility, and he takes care of this need. Zogemer Amshech, once he does that, that mitzvah becomes his. He says the mitzvah was hefker. It was hefker lakol. It was there, anyone could have taken care of it. Nobody did. It was neglected. In such a case, if one person stands up and he grabs it by the reins and he takes care of the mitzvah, that becomes his, and it cannot be taken away from him. His raya is a Gemara in Tanis, Daf Vav Ches, where when Klal Yisrael went back up from Golus to the Beis HaMikdash, so apparently no one was providing wood to the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash needs a lot of wood for the Mizbeach. There were certain families that took it upon themselves to take care of this need. And the Gemara in Tanya says that the Nevi'im among them made a takana that from now on, these families have kedima. And even when times got better, even when the rest of Klal Yisrael were they went to the Beis HaMikdash, and many people wanted a part of this mitzvah. It was too late. Since they had initially neglected it, these people had taken charge, then it becomes theirs, and it cannot be taken away from them. Now, Maram Shik does point out that the Gemara in Tanis is a specific takana. It's a takana that the Nevi'im made. But nevertheless, Maram Shik holds that you can apply this to other instances as well. Now, as a general rule, if you're ever involved in a machlokes and you hear someone quoting this Maram Shik, it means trouble. Because the cases where it's generally applied, and seen a number of them over the years, is you can have an organization, you can have a moisid, which it's in decline. The board of directors either doesn't have the ability or doesn't have the interest in maintaining the organization. They're not funding it appropriately. The staff is somewhat dysfunctional. And it's just going nowhere. Bayi Hayoim, they hire, the principal leaves, he sees what's going on, he finds himself a better job. They bring in a new principal, a new director. And this person comes in, he takes one look at what's going on, and he takes charge. He starts doing his own fundraising. He goes ahead, he gets rid of all of the personnel that need to be getting rid of. He hires new staff. And he changes around the whole place, and he salvages the organization. This goes on for a number of years, and 10, 15 years later, now it's a thriving organization. So in general, the same personalities and the set of skills that allowed this person to come in, get rid of all the people that needed to be fired and to build it up, over time, these people collect enemies. And now that it's a thriving organization, they want to push him out. They tell him, you were a hired hand. We hired you. We're firing you. Goodbye. So in that case, you will generally hear this Maram Shek. He will say, no, this organization was dead in the water. No one was funding it. No one was taking charge of it. It was literally a meis mitzvah. I am the one that took on the responsibility, the financial responsibility. I took on the responsibility of the management responsibility. And regardless of what my title was, this became mine because of all my efforts and because I salvaged it. Now, it's always a difficult argument to win. You have to establish it was a meis mitzvah. The person basically has to try to create ownership out of nothing. But these situations do come up when there's an organization where there's someone's hired, but he becomes the dominant force. He becomes the person who completely runs it, and you'll have to deal with this Maram Shik. The stipler quotes Maram Shik, or at least the same argument, and that becomes an issue that the Bezin will deal with. Now, I do want to point out, just for clarity, that in a way this Maram Shik is an exact contradiction to what we learned 2 weeks ago in the Ramah. Because the Ramah, when we discussed the concept of a chazak in the mitzvah, we discussed the idea of a sefer Torah. What happens if you have a kehila, and they always use one person's sefer Torah? So there's a concept of a chazakah. You always use my sefer Torah, a chazakah, it's my mitzvah, you have to use my sefer Torah, until it becomes possible. Dr. Ramah, that's only true if there were a few sefer Torah, but the Kehila made a point of using this person's, whether it was every week or whether on this week of his yahrzeit they always used his sefer Torah. So by using his and not the others, that showed that they intended to give this mitzvah to this person, it becomes his. Ma'aseh ein kein, if they only have one sefer Torah, then the fact that they use it proves nothing, Because they used it because they weren't giving anything away. There's no mechila, there's no matana. They used it because they had no other option. Ram Shik is really saying an opposite svar. He's saying bedafka when there's no one else here, when there's no other option, and you go ahead, there's no Sefer Torah in town, you're the only one that provides the Sefer Torah, then you have the Ram Shik's argument, this is a meis mitzvah, I'm the one that took care of it, and therefore it becomes mine. So while in the Ramah, when we're talking about a chazaka, about whether the tzibur gave it away, we can only establish a chazaka when there's a choice, and the tzibur gave it to you in spite of the fact that they had other options. This right of the Maram Sheik applies in the opposite case. It's only when there was no one around taking care of it, you did it on your own, then he says it was like a meis mitzvah, then you were zeichen it. What about in the case of if there's only one, if there's no Sefer Torah in town and one person donates it, why don't you have Maram Sheik svar? Why don't you say, just like if they're the ones donating the wood, then there's zeichen it. If there's no Sefer Torah around and you donate it, you have Maram Sheik. So, you know, while the Maram, no, I don't see anyone that addresses this directly. And some of the difference is that if you have a kehila that gets together and they need a Sefer Torah, so the fact that one person jumps up and says, you know what, I'm going to donate a Sefer Torah, is not enough to rise to the level of Maram Sheik. Because had he not jumped up, someone else would have done it. Or the kehila would have gotten together, they would have written a Sefer Torah b'shutfus. The fact that you grabbed it or you made the first move is not enough to trigger the Maram Sheik. Maram Sheik's case would be if you had a kehila that for years there were, or I don't know how long you need, but there was no Sefer Torah. They didn't have a Sefer Torah. They had to go somewhere else for laning, or they didn't lane, whatever they had to do. And there, in a case where it was neglected, someone goes ahead and writes a Sefer Torah and gives it, then he would be able to use Maram Sheik's arguments. This was a meis mitzvah. This mitzvah was neglected. The fact that I did it means it's mine. But in the absence of that, it's just a question. We have a kehila. We need a Sefer Torah. One person stands up and gives it. But had he not done it, someone else would have. There, the Maram Sheik would not apply. And there, you would have to go with the regular Dine Chazaka, which, will, like we said, will not apply when there's only one Sefer Torah. So this is the concept of Maram Sheik. When there's a neglected mitzvah that someone takes charge of, then this concept exists that it becomes his and it cannot be taken away from him. The last concept, which is the one that we'll spend the bulk of the remainder of this year and next week's year on, is a concept of Asrara. And that is, our discussions until now were about specific mitzvahs. You want to know who has the right to get this aliyah. You want to know who has the right to whose Sefer Torah should be used. Where to put the Erev. There's a specific mitzvah, and there's a question of who gets to do it, who gets to donate the wood, who gets to donate the oil. These are all one-off mitzvahs. The concept of Srara is that if there's a position in Klal Yisrael, if there's a position of power, of kavod, so then already, once a person has a Srara, it is very difficult to remove him. So the Makar for this halacha, the Rambam in Hilchos Melachim writes, that when you appoint a king, the halacha is, he harei ze zoicha loy ulavonov ad oilam. When you appoint a king in Klal Yisrael, there is no terms. He becomes the king himself, his children, forever. Shal Malchus Yerusha shenemar leman yarech yom ha-mamachta yuhu vonov bekar of Yisrael. Malchus passes Yerusha. Royalty passes on. It's a dynasty. It passes on to the children. Not only does it pass to a child who is roi lekach, but hiniach ben katan. If the king passes away, his child is too young to ascend to the throne. Mishamim lehamlucha sheyagdil. We have a caretaker government until the child becomes old enough, until he is able to assume the throne. V'chal koydim menachlo koydim liyerushas hamlucha. The Rambam writes, this does not only apply to children. If a king dies without any children, whoever is his closest Yoirish, al pi seder ha-Yerusha, he will take over the kingdom. You, on occasion, have fights between son-in-laws and uncles and things like that, and that will boils down to a question of how to learn this Rambam. The Hokus Yerusha we will, Mr. Shem, get to but in depth next week. The Rambam continues one condition, and that is he has to be mala mokim avosav. He has to fulfill he has to be able to fit into his father's footsteps. He clearly does not have to be the most qualified person for the job. If he was the most qualified person for the job, he would get the job regardless. as long as he is royal lekach, he has enough chochma and yiras shemayim to be considered a king, he will take over the position from his father, even if there are more qualified people available. Now the Rambam is talking about a king, but the Rambam adds a very important line. And what the Rambam writes is that this v'loy hamachos bilvad, this idea that when a king becomes king, it's his indefinitely, forever for his children, is not limited to being to monarchy. Ela kol hasroros v'chol haminuyim shebiyisrael, every sroro, every position of power, v'chol haminuyim, anyone who was appointed, anyone who was elected in Klal Yisrael, yerusha lipnoi ulvem benoi ad olam, they keep it forever. When they die, it passes to their children and to their children's children ad olam. So the Rambam, and Tosfos says as well, is extending this idea that a melech is there for life and he gets passed to his children. He says it is not limited to a king, it applies to every srara, every position of power. The Gemara's case that Tosfos is coming from is a nasi. You have a nasi who leads Klal Yisrael. This is something which is there indefinitely and it gets passed on to his children. Now based on this, whenever you're dealing with a mitzvah that involves a srara, which we will have to define, but if you have a srara, if you have a position of power, you're elected, you're the head of the kehila, the halacha is, you have that indefinitely, and this cannot be taken away from you. You do not need a chazaka, you do not have to come on to the concept of chashad in most cases, you do not have to come on to krushim. Once you're appointed, it's yours. Now, the reason why the Rivash needed the arguments of Krushim is he says, what happens if you're not appointed? Let's say on your own you decide to act like a Rav. So you're never given this position, so you can't claim Sarara. But nevertheless, since you in the facts on the ground that you had it, he says that is like the din of Krushim. You don't need to be appointed, you don't need the Tzibur's input. But once the Tzibur elects someone to a position of power, it is his lo'olam void. The Mechaber in Simin Nun Gimel, which we had the Marma Koimis, writes, after he starts the halacha that a chazen you cannot quit, the Mechaber seems to say that a chazen has a din of a srara. Now, although, I mean, a king has a srara, he decides life and death. But apparently a chazen that has the power to keep a kula there captive for hours and hours and force them to listen to him, that is considered a srara. Okay, we'll get back to that point a bit later. But after starting with this halacha, that a chazen, it's his, his child takes over. Zok the Mechaber, Kahal Shenogu Limnas Anashim Al Tzorchei Tzibur Lizman, when they had elections for a set period of time, and when the elections were over, when the term was over, they would elect someone to replace him. The Mechaber says that is fine. They have the right to have elections. Even if when they hire someone, they do not specify that, by the way, it's only a 4-year term, if this is the minog, if this is the norm in this community, it is stamo kipirushoi, and after the term is over, they can be misalakim, they can get rid of him. So it is clear, it's a halacha mefureshes, that a tenai helps, even when someone's hired for a srara, if when he was hired it was with a condition, it's for a set term, when the term is over, they have the right to be misalakim. Now that being said, although this is a halacha mefureshes, it's a darkei moshe, it's a mechaber, it's a rajba, there's no one that argues. There is a tshuva from the Chasam Sofer and a tshuva from the Igros Moshe. They have different angles, but they both basically flat out contradict this halacha as a practical matter. The Chasam Sofer is dealing with firing a rav. Now we'll get to in a few moments whether a rav is a srara and how to deal with rabbanus. But the Chasam Sofer in this tshuva is assuming a rav is a srara. And therefore, just like you cannot fire a king, you cannot fire a rav. When he dies, his child, if he's royal, cock will take his place. Zot Chasam Sofer, the case that he was dealing with, is that the rabbi had a contract. And it was a 3-year contract. So when the contract expired, they wanted to get rid of the rav. And they said, it's true, Asrara is la'olam. But over here, where the contract says it's a 3-year term, we have the right to get rid of you. And it's a mefurish rajba, it's a mefurish halacha that we just learned. Zog the rajba, nothing doing. The rajba begins by saying that, look, it's true you have a contract that it's 3 years. He said, but why is it there? He said, look around. He uses very strong language. He said, it is unheard of for a community to fire a rav, to mimsalak a rav, lo nishma davar kazeh. No one ever heard about it. It's a tremendous avla. This tshuva was written many, many years ago. But the Chassam Sofer says it's not done. Kehilos do not fire rabbanim. Im kein, why is there a 3-year term in the contract? He says it must be the other way around. Rabbanim occasionally retire. They had enough of the kehila. They get a better shteler somewhere else. They don't want to be locked in la'olam. Therefore, Zok v'Chassam Sofer, they write in the contract a term so that at the end of the 3 years, if the rav wants to quit, even though Paul Yochel Lachser by Paul can always quit, but he wants to be able to quit without any issues of Mechusar Amona, without anyone having tainos. So he writes, I'm only committing to stay here for 3 years. But he says, we interpret it, that's only on the rav's end. But mitzad the community, he says, since it is a srara, a standard srara is la'olam, the community certainly does not have the right to fire the rav after the period. Now, how does he learn the mechaber? How does he learn the salacha? So the mechaber's case was, the minhug was, you had elections every 4 years, and after the election, you voted someone new in, and you got rid of the old person. So it wasn't just they wrote in the contract that it's a 3-year term. At the end of the term, at the end of the 4 years, they had new elections, and new people came in. So in such a case, there's a rotation. When everyone knows that after the 2 years, after 4 years, whatever the term is, there's a rotation, there's a new election, new people come in. So then, clearly, when this srara began, it was a limited srara. If you have the Rav HaRashi in Eretz Yisrael, where they're elected for a term, so if that's the term, that's what happens. The facts on the ground are that at the end of the term, someone else comes in. So they cannot argue srara and use that and say, I want to retain the position. However, when the facts on the ground are that the srara is la'olam, the fact that the contract happens to say it's a 3-year contract, that does not override this halacha. Only when the practice is to replace the people. Now, if there's someone who's very popular who he happens to get reelected each time, good. So everyone understands he's popular, and that's why if he lost the vote, he'd be out. But it means wherever the period is, there's a rotation. There's a new election, and unless he qualifies again, he will not retain his position. Masha Enkein, if they just stay, they'd stay loyal and void, the fact that the contract is for a term, there the Chassam Sofer says that would not be enough. No. Like this. Again, what the Chassam Sofer says is that's not the pshat in the contract. He says, since we see no one gets rid of a rav, we interpret the contract just to mean to give the rav the right to back out. It is not in any way limiting the srara. That's the Chassam Sofer's chiddush. Now, if we go with the Chassam Sofer directly, what would be if they write specifically in the contract, it is only for this term? We don't know yet. Chassam Sofer makes a point of reinterpreting the contract in a way that the contract doesn't directly override this halach. Good. Very good. So what happens if you specify, I don't mean that I'm writing this contract not like the Chassam Sofer. We mean we want the right to get rid of this rav. So there the Chassam Sofer is silent. He doesn't directly address this issue. But there's a shuva from the Igros Moshe. Igros Moshe is talking about actually a Rebbe, where the Moshe wanted to get rid of him. And they made this argument. The contract says that at the end of the year, we can fire you. So the here Rav Moshe says also, nothing doing. He says like this. If the Rebbe is not doing a good job, he got old, he's no longer able to teach. Certainly if there's cause, this halacha doesn't apply. But he says, if you want to make that argument that he's not royal lakach, that needs a Bezdin. You can't do that on your own. If the Rebbe says he's Roy Lakach, he's a wonderful Rebbe, just the Manal or the director has an agenda against him, he has the right to have an impartial third party make that hachlota, make that decision. But let's put that aside. Let's say there's no evidence that he's not doing a good job, and they want to fire him simply because of the contract. So the Rav Moshe says that you can't do that. He says even if the directors are working for the tzibur, their responsibility is to the tzibur, to run their moisir al pi halacha. If al pi halacha, he says, a srara is supposed to be indefinitely, so to be misalik a person without any reason whatsoever, he says that is kneged halacha, and he is misupik whether directors have the right to do that. He says it's an avlo. Just because directors that are running a moisir do not have the right to do something kneged hadin for the Moisid. And therefore, he suggests, even if it's in the contract, because the directors overstepped their authority, they didn't have the right to make such a condition. So he says, he has a tzad to say, even if it's specific in the contract, we can ignore it, that will be thrown out, and the tanai is nothing. Then he adds, in the Chassam Sofer's case, if it doesn't say specifically, at the end of the year we can fire you without cause, it just says it's a one-year contract, he says, in that case, we would go back to the halacha of Asrara. The contract is for 1 year, but what? Let's say there was no contract. So you hire Rebbe without a contract whatsoever. The halacha is, once he's hired, if you assume a Rebbe is Asrara, which we'll also have to discuss, once he's Asrara, you cannot get rid of him. Now that there's the added protection of a contract, the fact that the contract is limited to a year doesn't change the right, doesn't take away the fact that it's Asrara, which goes loyal. So if you would write specifically you can fire him at any time, this last argument of Moshe will not apply. But Rav Moshe is mesupik. He says it's possible directors do not have the right to insert such a clause because it's keneged halacha. And therefore, Rav Moshe rules that under any circumstances, if the Moshe wants to fire Rebbe, saying he is no longer up to the job, he got old, he's no longer capable of doing it, the Rebbe has the right to insist to go to a Bezdin, an impartial third party that will look at the evidence and see, are there really grounds to fire the Rebbe? Is his performance really below par? In a more parv case, where it doesn't specify anything about Sarah, it just said, the term is 1 year. He says we cannot jump to conclusions that we're overriding the Sarah. It means whatever the advantage of a contract is, whatever additional rights it gives people, those rights are for a year. At the end of the year, the contract is over, so we'll go back to a Sarara. If you want to override the Sarara, you have to be specific. It has to be in a case like in the Mechaber, where the practice and where the Metzius was, there was a rotation. Every few years, or every when the term was over, they moved out the old. Now, this is a problem that many Moistas face, because as they age, their staff ages with them, and at some point, they become less effective. So some Rebbeim recognize that and they leave. Others either don't recognize the fact that they're not as effective as they used to be, or perhaps they don't have a choice. They were not paid enough. They weren't able to put away any savings. So it's difficult for them to just wake up, just to quit their jobs when they have nothing to fall back on. And you have situations where they're Dinei Torah, where the Rebbe says, I'm a perfectly competent Rebbe, I'm doing a great job, just I started up with the three rich people in the class and they're out to get me, that's why I'm getting fired. The Moisit says the Rebbe has not been performing. He did great service for 30 years, but now it's time for him to move on. So if it goes to a Din Torah, you're dealing with a situation. The Bezdin has the unpleasant task of trying to determine whether the Rebbe is doing a good job or not. Now, how do you do that? The only way to do that is to have Eidus, bringing in either Talmidim or parents. You need Eidus Zep Bifnei Zeh. You need the Rebbe and all the parties in the room while everyone is talking about things that happened in class. It is a very hurtful process for everyone involved, especially the Talmidim. So because of that, it rarely ends up or going till the end. There generally is a settlement. But when you hear about these machloksin and fights and these settlements of these financial settlements, it's because of this idea. The idea that Rav Moshe was very strong about it, you can't fire a Rebbe unilaterally, you have to establish there's cause. And because of the difficulties, the unpleasantness of establishing clause, there usually is some form of negotiated settlement where there's a payoff and he leaves on his own. I heard recently there were some Moises in New York that were dealing with this issue, and it was a beautiful concept. What they did is they created a pension plan for their Rebbe. It created a separate fund. They actually raised money for it separately. And they told the Rebbeim like this. Everyone, these Rebbeim were all working. They had their salary. They had whatever their benefits were. That stayed the same. They went over to the Rebbeim and said, listen, we are ready to raise money for a respectable pension plan. We know you're not able to put money aside. We're putting it aside for you, and we're going to fund it X amount of dollars per year. There's one condition for this pension plan. And that is, when we decide or determine it's time for you to go, that you're no longer able to teach, at that point, you have a choice. You either leave and get the pension plan, or you fight us and you don't get the pension. You might win the Din Torah. We might have to keep you another few years. But this pension is totally voluntary. We are ready to do it only if you're willing to accept that you will abide by whatever decision we make about what's best for the Moisir. And, you know, in the Moisir that did it, they funded it generously enough that it was worthwhile for the Rebbeim to accept the offer. There were certain protections in place so that the Rebbeim felt a better comfort level. They wouldn't just be dismissed out of hand. But this is just a beautiful way of dealing with the situation where now they have their own incentive. Number one, they're able to retire respectably. And number two, it avoids the fight, it avoids the machlokes, it avoids the Dinei Torah. If the person is not capable of doing that job, and we'll have to define what that means, then you can get rid of them. If a shliach tzibur is caught doing averis, you get rid of him. Now, the point of Sarara is, and that's the halacha also in Nun Gimel, is the fact that there are rumors about someone is not enough. It says Sarara, rumors alone are not enough to fire someone. But if it's established that he's doing, that he's a bala avera, that he's not roi for this position, then it's removed. And in all positions, if there's appropriate cause, it's taken away. So this is the concept of Sarara. Whenever there's a public position, it cannot be taken away. It even passes over Yerusha. The question that we have to deal with, which Mirtz Hashem will deal with next week, is what qualifies as a Sarara? Is Rabbanus a Sarara? Is a Rebbe a Sarara? Is a principal a Sarara? How far do we take it? How far does it go? And then the follow-up question is, when there is a Sarara, how do we deal with Hilchos Yerusha? When a king, a Rebbe, the Rosh Yeshiva dies, who has Kedima, and under what conditions do his children or do his Yarshim take over the Moisir?